So we'll be continuing on with this theme of mindfulness, present moment, silence, so that you can use this in your life and in your profession to help other people and to help yourselves. I mentioned during the last piece of advice on dealing with anxiety that with every emotion is a corresponding physical feeling in your body somewhere. But because people are not in touch with their body, they don't really understand all the different feelings and sensations which are going on in their body. That's one of the reasons, number one, they're sick, and number two, they can't deal even with the emotional world. Because the body, for many people, is terra incognita. In other words, uncharted, unknown world. So, in a few minutes, I'm going to be teaching you a lovely meditation to relax your body. And if you think that you know how to relax, you're going to discover that you don't know much about relaxation at all. And that much of the tension of your life is stored in your body. And by doing this little simple technique, you can actually relax your body to a degree you've never felt before. There are parts of the body which you are simply not aware of because you've never bothered to be aware of them. An example of this was one of the monks in my monastery. He always had a sore back when he was meditating. And no matter how many cushions he used or whether he sat meditation on a chair, still he had this pain in the back. And he went to see the doctor, they gave him a scan, and they found he had a congenital defect of his spine. And the doctor said, you'll never be able to sit still for very long without pain. It's just a defect in your spine, that's the way it is. Sorry. And he said, well, I want to meditate. Well, I'm afraid you can't, it's too painful. So the doctor didn't know what to do. He came back feeling quite depressed, but at least he had some idea of mindfulness of the body. So what he did, he got this advice from a book somewhere. He realized from this book that on either side of the spine there are muscles which you have no feelings of, but they are there. In order to get some mindfulness of the muscles on either side of his spine, he started with his fingers tracing and feeling those muscles. Until he did this for many hours every day, until he could feel those muscles without needing to touch them. Once he could feel those muscles without needing to touch them, he'd actually got a connection. In neuroscience, we'd say he'd actually made the neural connections between those muscles and his brain. And once he had that connection, he could feel those muscles, it wasn't a long time before he could move those muscles at will. Once you can feel them, the feeling, the mindfulness of those muscles gives you what we call feedback. You try something and he notices the feeling change. You're starting to get some control over those muscles. Little by little, you could notice through the feedback from mindfulness of those muscles, you could start to stretch them and relax them at will. Once you got to that stage of being able to stretch and relax the muscles on either side of his spine, he started to exercise those muscles, moving them up and down several hours every day, until those muscles became so strong, which they are now, they compensated for the weakness in his spine, and now he can sit without any pain. It's a very brilliant method of dealing with a problem which no one else could fix. But the reason I mention that is the whole idea, there's parts of your body you've never bothered, because you never had to, feel. They're there, but you haven't got a connection with them. Because you haven't got a connection with them, you can't deal with them. You can't even relax them. So much of your body gets tense and you can't do anything about it. Until you try this method and you can relax parts of the body you never thought you could relax, simply through mindfulness, awareness of parts of the body, and the awareness giving you feedback, so you learn from the feedback, trying this and trying that, how to relax. And you will find the way to relax those parts of the body is nothing else than compassion, kindness, what you take to be, you know, like love. Just in the same way that many of you may have had an experience of, like, you know, being in pain, and your mother coming up to you and stroking you, or just smiling at you, just giving you a little bit of compassion, and the ache or the pain vanishing, or at least getting much less. You will find if you focus on a part of the body and give it kindness, and now you'll be realizing what kindness is, that thing which relaxes the muscles, then you will actually be able to relax parts of your body at will. I've been practicing this for a long time, so I like to tell the story, which I've told already during my trip to Hong Kong about 15 months ago. Many of the monks in my monastery had food poisoning. It's what we call an occupational hazard of a monk, because, you know, you feed us what you think we like. A lot of the time it's not what we like, but we eat it anyway, and we put it in our mouth, and sometimes it agrees with us, sometimes it doesn't. And sometimes, because people, they really try their very best, but sometimes there might be some dirt or something in the food. You know, often it's not cooked fresh, it's brought to you, you know, because we eat at a certain time, we don't go to the restaurants. And so sometimes we get food poisoning. So I and many other monks got food poisoning. And when you got food poisoning, you know, the guts really ache, and you sort of, I was in my room just basically rolling around holding my tummy. Now, usually you should go to see the doctor and get some pills, but instead of taking the pills or going to see the doctor, once it got that bad, I realized this is food poisoning, this is serious stuff. What I did was be mindful of my guts. Not trying to get away from it, but putting full awareness. What is this feeling like? Really getting into full awareness, full mindfulness of that pain. Once I made contact with that, instead of trying to run away from it, then I spread this beautiful kindness. And really, really being so compassionate to the pain in my guts. And noticing, second by second, minute by minute, the whole guts relaxed more and more and more. It took me about between 15 and 20 minutes. And all the pain disappeared. I was free of the food poisoning. Without any medication, without seeing a doctor. It should not surprise me, because I've done it many times, but every time you do it, it's just amazing, it's wonderful what you can do. You know, with something as painful as food poisoning, 1 minute you're in agony, 20 minutes later, you're free, just happy as Larry. And that's what you can do. And I'm going to teach you how to do that. Now, of course, that's when you practice a lot, you can do things like that. But even now, you can do a great deal to relax your own body. We call this the sweeping meditation. We call it a sweeping meditation because you start from one part of the body and you sweep up slowly right up to the very top of the body and out. I usually start this with my toes. I know other people, they start from the head and they go down, but I prefer starting from the toes simply because it takes a time to build up your awareness and your ability to relax. So you start with your toes, which are not that important, and your feet and your legs. By the time you get to the important part, where all your organs are, then you've built up enough ability to be aware and to be relaxed, that when you get to all these organs, like, you know, your bowels, you know, your livers, your hearts, your lungs, your tummies, and especially what I love doing with this with women, your breasts. Because many of you, I think 1 in 3 in the West, will suffer from some form of breast cancer. I think 1 in 3, is that the number? I think something like that, a huge amount. You can actually be aware and relax your own breasts in a way you never thought was possible. I teach this to breast cancer foundations, and they love it, simply because you can actually do something to make sure that your chances of getting breast cancer are reduced significantly, taking away tightnesses and tensions in that part of your body. And then just down your arms, through your head, everything, and you relax the whole lot, stage by stage, piece by piece. You learn how to relax, just like that monk learned how to relax muscles in the back, which most of you are not aware exist. You can even relax your liver. You can do that. And it does relax, and it feels more at ease. You can relax your breast. You can relax your face. Relax even your brain, which is what's going to happen in the end. And it's amazing just how you feel just so free, so at ease. Energies can flow. Healing energies happen. And you become far more healthy. Also, you'll find that if you live stressful lives, much of that anxiety and stress, as many people notice, I'm not sure if this is true or not, but at least it feels like it, and it's a good paradigm because it works. Much of that stress is like stored in your body. And one of the reasons why you can't sleep well at night is because your body is tense. Because I notice that if I've been working hard, running around, I know I'm aware of my body, my legs are tight. And all I need to do is to relax that tightness to be able to go to sleep at night. Because when it's too tight, it's a certain type of pain. Not the pain which is throbbing or which you can really notice, but it's a sensation which is strong enough that it won't allow you to fall asleep. So once you learn this relaxation technique, relaxing parts of your body one by one, sweeping up the body, you'll find that if you do suffer from insomnia, you go to bed at night, you just can't fall asleep, try this, it works. It works so well, as I was saying to somebody just during the tea break, that there is a friend of mine, she's a psychologist in Sydney, and this is a classic Buddhist technique, but she has started a company called sleeplikeababy.com. Which teaches this technique online for a fee. And she told me 100% success rate, people with insomnia fall asleep. And she has been making a fortune on this technique. You don't need to log in to sleeplikeababy.com. She's made enough money, now I teach it for free. Undercutting her business, but she's okay. Because it really works. You learn how to relax so much that you can fall asleep well, even after such a busy and hectic day. So, how it works is this. I'll just run through it, but when we do this, I'm going to give the guided meditation and take you right through it from the beginning to the end. So you don't need to remember it. I'm just going to give you the preview to give you an understanding of roughly what's going to happen. You know, you start, you know, again, you're sitting down. You can sit on a chair if you like. Obviously, at night time, you're laying down in your bed. You close your eyes and you notice sensations in your toes. Like even now, you don't need to look at your toes. Look at me. Can you feel your toes now? If you can't feel them, you just wiggle them and you start feeling them. We call that making contact with that part of your body until you can feel those toes. Now, what do they feel like? What's the sensation like? Don't give it a name, but know it. Now, will it to relax? See if you can relax the sensation in your toes. The sensation will change from second to second. And you will notice that you can relax your toes. It's the weirdest thing when you first do this. I never thought my toes were tense. But I can actually relax them. I feel them like opening out, tightness is vanishing. And they get all sort of soft and tingly. You can't relax your toes too much because there's not that much tension there. And then you move up to your feet. Can you notice any sensations anywhere in your feet? It can be anywhere in the feet, in the soles, in the heels, in the uppers, anywhere around there. Once you notice that sensation, that's called contact. Now you will that sensation to relax. You're kind to it. And then your feet relax. You feel them becoming more comfortable, more at ease. And then you move to your ankles, your calves, to your knees, to your thighs, relaxing every part one by one. Spending enough time until you've relaxed it, you can't relax it anymore, then you move on to the next part. You move on to your bottom. Your bottom pressed against the seat. You think you can't relax that, but you can. You can take off some tension. And then after you've reached your bottom, then you get to the interesting part. The part where all your vital organs are. You go up, you know, to your colon. You know, you are in the hospital profession, you know this better than I do, all the organs which are there. I just know there's a feeling there somewhere. Maybe the bottom of your spine is injured, you just notice any sensation anywhere in that part of the body, and you relax it. You imagine that any tightness is being released, any knots being expanded. So you relax the part of the body known as your waist, inside and outside. And when it's relaxed as much as you can make it, you go up further to just below your chest, above your waist, that part in between. There's so many organs there, livers and kidneys, maybe intestines. Relaxing all of that area, you feel it. Just that area, no other area of the body. You feel it and you will it to relax until it relaxes, opens out, you get so at ease. You go up a bit further, you know, where your stomach is, your lungs, your heart, women, your breasts. Can you notice any sensations there? You're in contact with that area of the body. And you would it to relax. When you feel what was once tight is now loose, or once had some tension is now free, and you feel it relaxing, it's a certain feeling of tingling, open. I call it tingling feeling. That's my word for it. You may make your own word for the feeling of that part of your body being totally relaxed. And I go up to my neck, and my shoulders first of all, then down my arms, up to my neck, to my face. And last of all, after having relaxed my whole face, just focusing on that area of the body, noticing sensations and willing them to relax, I go 2 inches behind my eyes to my brain. According to medicine, there are no nerve endings in your brain. You can't feel any sensations in the brain. I don't care. You can imagine sensations. You can imagine your brain. You can imagine relaxing your brain. Until your brain feels free. You relax your whole body. At the end of that 20 minutes or so meditation, you feel so wonderful, so free, so happy. That's why we call it the body sweeping relaxation meditation. Mindfulness is a part of your body and relaxing more deeply than you've ever done before. I remember once teaching this in Singapore, they had an executive, like 1 hour at lunch time, talk on how to meditate. You know, people have never meditated in their lives before. And I had to teach them very quickly how to meditate. I taught them this relaxation method and had a couple of thousand execs really chilling out. Oh, I really loved that because it had a huge effect on them. They never meditated before in their lives. And they already experienced some peace and relaxation because they were so tense inside their bodies. So that's actually how it works. A sweeping meditation to relax the body, bring good health, get you in touch with the body, so it's very easy. If there is any anxiety, any fear, you can feel those sensations. You don't even need to massage it. You can do it just by will, just relaxing it. And it all disappears. And if ever you have any physical problems, like an operation, you can look at that wound, feel it, and relax it to the max, and heal it incredibly quickly. Any internal injuries, you just relax everything. It really, really helps enormously in all areas of your life, and it's such a simple technique. Once you learn it, you can teach it to others, so they too can relax and have a healthy, happy life. Is that quite clear? Okay, so to start it, we'll do our usual preliminary technique of standing up. And really getting your body loose again. Once it's nice and loose and stretched, then you can sit down. Those of you who have sore bottoms or sore legs or sore knees, that's why we have the chairs for. The chairs are not for looking at, they're for sitting on. So if you've got sore knees or sore back and you think, oh gee, another 20 minutes of meditation, this is terrible, please go and sit on a chair. You're most welcome. Okay. So even I'm sitting on a chair, okay? So, close your eyes. And with your eyes closed, relax the body just superficially first of all, and just make sure you're sitting comfortably. No tight pieces of clothing anywhere. Everything's nice and loose. Your legs are not pressed too tightly against each other, they're going to cause pain. And then, see if you can remember those two suitcases again. The one on the left hand is your past, the one on the right hand is your future. Because in the interval you pick them up again. Now feel the suitcase in your left hand, the past. It's heavy, but you haven't been holding on for so long, so it's not that heavy. Just put it down. No past is allowed in this meditation. Put it down. Let it go. The suitcase in the right hand, your future. What are you going to do when you leave here? That's the future. Don't burden yourself with what's not happened yet. Now is the place your future is being made. So put the bag containing your fears and plans down. Put it down. And move your right hand away from the bag representing your past, your future, sorry. So once again, you've let go of the past, and you've let go of the future. You're in this present moment, once again. Right here, with life as it's happening. Not looking into the future, what's going to happen next. Not lingering in the past, concerned about what's already happened, which you can't change. Putting your attention in this very moment, life, being, now. And once you're in this present moment, we're not going to do the silence because I'm going to be doing the talking, so you don't need to be thinking. Now see if you can be aware of your toes. If it's difficult, move the toes, wiggle them. Once you can become aware of any sensation in your toes, we call that making contact between your brain and your toes. You become aware of the sensation in your toes. Once you have established that awareness, that mindfulness, now will those toes to relax.
The trick is compassion. And see if you can experience the mindfulness of the toes. Change the sensation, move to what you can recognize as relaxation. See how deeply you can relax your own toes. Aware, releasing, relaxing, until there's a certain sensation, what I say, my tingling sensation, where the toes are relaxed to the max. It feels very pleasant. And once you've relaxed your toes as much as you think you can, sweep the attention up to your feet. Can you notice any sensation in your feet? The heels, the soles, the uppers, inside the feet, doesn't matter where. Because once you have noticed sensations in the feet, and just the feet, you have made contact. Now send compassion to your feet. Relax them. Imagine if you've had a foot massage, they've just been foot massaged and they're just so loose and free. They've just been bathed in warm water, so there's hardly any tension left in your feet. You notice the sensations, relaxed, open, free. Still focusing exclusively on your feet, continue relaxing those sensations. Until your feet are as relaxed as you can possibly make them. And now move your attention to your ankles. Your ankles carry so much pressure from the weight of your body, transferring it onto the feet. Can you notice any sensations in your ankles? Once you've made contact with your ankles, you can will them to relax. Whatever feelings, sensations are there, observe them move in the direction of more ease, more comfort, more relaxation. As you relax your own ankles. So they feel so comfortable, more relaxed than when you began, maybe even more relaxed than you've ever noticed. And then you move your attention, you sweep it up to your lower legs, your calves. Can you notice any sensation in your lower legs? Once you've made contact with that area of your body, again, send it kindness, compassion, warmth. Imagine any tightness being released, any tension loosening, any balls of pain or tension, tightness expanding, any perception which is associated with the feeling of deeper relaxation. And notice the sensations in your calves move more into relaxation and comfort. So there's hardly any tightness or tension left in your lower legs. Until they tingle with this open, free, relaxing feeling. And then you move your attention up to your knees. Again, knees have many problems later on in life. Can you notice any sensations in or around your knees? It's not hard to notice a feeling there. You've made contact. Now relax that feeling. As if the knees are sinking into the softest of cotton cushions. So there's no tightness or tension or pressure on them at all. So the knees relax. And the feedback of your mindfulness, your awareness from your knees, tells you that they are getting more and more relaxed. And once your knees are relaxed and tingling, move your mindfulness, your attention up to your thighs. This huge mass of muscles, skin, bones, blood vessels inside. Can you notice any sensation in your thighs? Whatever that sensation is, will it to relax? Usually after a hard day, it's my calves and thighs which carry the tightness. So I imagine them expanding. I imagine that two people have been putting this rope somewhere in my legs, and I let the rope go. So it's loose and at ease now. So there's no more force anywhere in my thighs. Everything is released, relaxed, and comfortable. And then notice that old tingling feeling of my thighs, really, really relaxed. The mindfulness gives me the feedback. After a while, you become well experienced from the feedback given by mindfulness. You've well experienced to know exactly how to relax your thighs. Then you move your attention up to your bottom. You can feel the sensation of it pressed against the cushion or the chair. It's not hard to notice that sensation. You've made contact. Now will the bottom to relax. That feeling of pressure against the chair can and does ease off. As you're not holding any of the muscles tight in your buttocks, you're relaxing those muscles, letting them go, letting those tendons be rather than pulling them or pushing them. Everything so loose and free as you relax your own bottom. Now just take a quick look at the whole lower part of your body from the bottom to the toes. Really relaxed, more than you've known before. Now we go up to the interesting part of our body, to your waist. Can you notice any sensations in or around your waist area? It could be the lower spine, It could be the bowels. It could be the other organs which are located in or around that part of your body. If you notice a sensation there, you've made contact. Relax those sensations. Open them out. Take away the tightness. If it's a ball of irritation, imagine it expanding. Because usually the pain, the tightness, the tension comes when we pull or we squash. So go the opposite direction. Don't pull, loosen. Don't squash, expand. And you'll find that part of your body called your waist, inside and outside, really gets very loose and free. Will the body to relax in and around your waist. So the sensations you feel move to a state of more comfort. At peace. Open. Free. Now move up a couple of inches to the area above your waist, below your chest. So many organs in there. The intestines, the liver, the kidneys, the spleen, that part of your vertebrae. So much stuff there. Can you notice any sensation or feeling above your waist, below your chest? That's called making contact with that area, to the exclusion of all other areas. Making contact with that area, see if you can relax the whole area below your chest, above your waist. So nothing is held tightly. Any irritations are opened out, expanded, released, relaxed. With your whole area above the waist and below the chest relaxes to the max. If you have any problems with kidneys or livers, there'll be a sensation there somewhere. Even if it's a disease which hasn't been diagnosed yet, the mindfulness can feel there's a problem there. You send it kindness, you relax it, and you feel blockages open, tightnesses being released. As you relax your own inner organs. At first you may not be able to feel them. Just like that monk. Eventually he could feel the muscles around his spine. Through persistence you can feel the organs inside you. You can relax them. Open them out. Heal them. And then move the attention up to your chest. Could be your lungs, your stomach. As I mentioned enough times already, the woman's breasts, the heart, whatever is there. Can you notice any sensations in that part of your body? Can you feel that part of your body? Become sensitive to it. That's making contact. Being mindful of one particular section of your body. Once you've made contact, it's relatively easy to relax just that part of your body. Sending kindness, openness, freedom, taking away all tensions and tightnesses and demands. Just letting that part of your body be. Be free. You might notice tightnesses in your muscles which you've never noticed before. You can relax them, release them. as energy flows to that part of your body. Kindness, compassion, energy, healing, relaxing, freeing. When that part of the body feels relaxed, move up to your shoulders. There's always tightness in the shoulders. Notice those sensations. Be aware of them. Make contact. And then send kindness. So your shoulders relax. You don't need to have the massage. You can relax them by your own choice and will. By your own kindness, you can learn how to relax your own shoulders. You notice the sensations change, that's relaxation. Keep going in that direction. Now your whole torso, from shoulders down to the bottom, relaxed, open, at ease. Now go down your arms, first the upper arms, including the elbow. Can you notice any sensations in your upper arms, including your elbow? After a while, when you ask, you can know. Now, just relax those sensations, will them to be more at ease. And you notice the sensations change. You do relax the muscles, the bones, the skin, the blood vessels, everything in your upper arms and your elbows too. Till the whole area of your upper arms feels like it's expanded, loose, free, totally relaxed. Now you sweep down to your forearms, including your wrists, but not your hands. Can you notice any sensations in your forearms? Again, you've made contact. Again, will them to relax. You're just noticing sensations in your forearms and nothing more. Making sure that everything is free, no tightness, no tension in your forearms. And now notice sensations in your hands. It's so easy to notice sensations in your hands without opening your eyes because your hands have so many nerve endings. Will the hands to relax. So there's no tightness left. Nothing is tense. There's even your hands relax to the max. As if they have been on very, very soft pillows. There's no tightness for a long time. Totally at ease, no tension visible at all. Now as you relaxed your whole arms, move up to your neck. The neck and the throat. Can you notice any sensations anywhere in your neck or your throat? Those who have irritations of the throat, coughs and whatever, you find with training you can actually relax a lot of those irritations. You can feel the sensation and expand it. Loosen the tension. Stop the pressure by releasing. Once you can make contact with the throat and the neck, it's amazing what you can do. The sensations do change and you find out what it takes to change the feelings, the sensations in your neck and throat to deeper and deeper states of relaxation. until your throat is really, really relaxed. And then you move your attention up to your face. Usually there's much tension around the eyes and the mouth. So easy to make contact with your face. Can you notice those sensations? Any sensations will do in your face. Now will them to relax, to open out, to release. So you're not holding any muscle tight in your face. Until the face feels so open and free. No tightness there at all, expanding it. Not tightening and screwing anything up. Open, free, relax. Now focus your mindfulness 2 inches behind your eyes, thereabouts, where your brain is located. See if you can imagine a sensation in your brain. Make contact that way. And will your brain to relax. No tightness, no pushing, no holding. Till the feeling in the brain is so relaxed and free. Now before you stop, just feel the whole body from toe to head, totally relaxed, hardly any tension left at all. You've completed the sweeping meditation, relaxing parts of the body one by one, and learning what it takes to remove the tension. I'm going to be quiet for a couple of minutes so you can enjoy a relaxed body. So now is the end of this meditation. Very slowly open your eyes. And just enjoy the beautiful, relaxed feeling. There we go. It's the body meditation. Uh, Life can become so tense sometimes, running around, doing things. You do that relaxation method and the body feels so at ease. And if those of you, again, trouble falling asleep, it's so easy to fall asleep doing that meditation, like I almost did. If I wasn't giving the instructions, I probably would have fallen asleep. So, anyway, did that work for you? Could you relax the body? And put your hands up if you could relax the body. Very good. So, you may have only just started doing that. So imagine what happens when you train yourself in that for a year or two. You can really relax any part of the body, whatever you want. So it's good to train on that and teach other people how to train on relaxing the body stage by stage. And again, it's surprising that you can relax parts of the body which you've never even noticed before, never even tried to relax, even thought you could relax them. And that really, really helps get rid of tightness, tensions, diseases, injuries so easily. You may have like a wound or a bruise somewhere. You focus on it, relax all the muscles around it. I think, I don't know too much about medicine, but I know inflammation, everything gets tight around the wound or the inflammation. So tight that, you know, that nothing can really help. So just relaxing around that, everything can be healed pretty quickly. And also you notice, by noticing your body, you become very smart. When I was a young monk in Thailand, we would often go without shoes, walking barefooted. And we were always banging our feet or treading on things until our master told us, "You Westerners have got stupid feet." I never understood that feet could be stupid. I always thought, yeah, maybe, you know, I could be stupid, but stupid feet, and how accurate he was, because I had so little mindfulness of my feet that you didn't really know what you were doing. And after a while, you were so mindful of your feet, you could walk around without stepping on anything. It's as if the feet became intelligent, because they had feelings. And so many of you may have stupid feet, which is why you keep kicking things. You have stupid knees, so which means that you put them in unhealthy situations and you don't realize it. So once you become aware of your body, it's amazing what your body will tell you. I read a book years ago. They said heart attacks don't come from nowhere. That for many, many months beforehand, your heart is telling you there's a problem there. It gives you signs. But you're so unaware of the physical feelings in the body because you're so busy doing something else. You don't notice the signs until the big one comes. Ah! So remember, your body actually gives you warning signs many, many times before illnesses happen. But if you're very aware of the feelings in the body, you can notice those signs earlier and take preventative measures. For me, I do become very aware of my body. So if it is tired, I know it needs a rest, and I give it that rest. Now, if it's tight somewhere, you know, you can sort of loosen it somewhere because you're aware of it. The more you are aware of the body, mindful of the body, the more you can look after your health. And the more you can teach that to other people so they become healthier. So the more that there's less sick people in Hong Kong, which means the less stress you have as carers, because you don't have to look after so many people. You may have to have a reduction in your salary because the amount of people sick get less, but nevertheless I think it's a good thing to do. Some of you may be out of a job if everybody practices this. There will hardly be any sick people left in Hong Kong. But I'm sure that there's always some sick people. There's always work for you to do. And I think that the less work you can do, or just the way you can work with less stress, with less sickness, the better. And if you do this when you're really tired at night, very tense, please, this works so well, relaxing the whole body. And if it's just too much for you to remember how to do this, that particular method, I know on my website, bswa.org, you can download a guided sweeping meditation. So you can just put it on your sort of
your iPod and just put it on when you're going to sleep at night. You have all the instructions there, and then you go to sleep and have a wonderful time. Okay. Any questions or feedback on the sweeping meditation? Was there any problems there? You don't have to follow that particular time scale. You can spend more time on one area, less time on another area, especially if you have an injury or a sickness. If you have an injury or sickness somewhere, obviously you want to spend a long time there. Or any place you feel there's a tightness there, a tension there, spend even longer there until it really, really relaxes. Because once it really, really relaxes, then you can move on to the next part. Because, you know, there's some injuries, some you may have a sore eye or something. Yes. Yeah. Can you go directly to that particular part? Of course you can, but only if you've done enough training that you know how to be mindful of one part of the body and you know how to relax it. If you haven't done this meditation before, you find it too difficult actually to get to know, like, you know, your heart or your stomach, if it's got stomach ache, because you've never done that before. You don't know how to be mindful of a part of the body and to relax it. But if you train many, many times, that's exactly what I did when I had the food poisoning. I didn't start with my toes, went straight to my guts, and then just relaxed it, really opened it out, until all the tightness actually vanished. It's amazing just how well you can do that. I'm not quite sure why that works. I know that in Chinese medicine, Indian medicine is the same, that you've got like the qi, the energy flows in the body which get blocked, which is the cause of sickness. In Indian medicine they say the wind's flowing in the body, and that's why it gets blocked. I do remember an article where they took the Dalai Lama to a hospital in the United States. I know, it's the Dalai Lama's doctor, traditional Tibetan doctor, to check him out, see if he was the real thing. And they gave him a patient to look at, so what's wrong with this guy? And he checked him out, you know, with, I don't know, the pulses in the wrist or whatever. And he said, you know, the winds in this guy's heart area are all blocked. And he had sort of, you know, the arteries were all blocked. He was about to have like a bypass examination. And they're really surprised that, you know, he used different language, but, you know, the traditional Tibetan medicine had the problem, you know, identified it pretty quickly. So, you know, energies being blocked in the body and relaxing the body just opens the energies from being blocked so healing can happen. So basically that's how it works. Yeah. Ah. Yeah. Yeah, think about kindness to it. Yeah, there's a story which is, it's a great little story for medicine. It's for meditation. It was told by the Buddha. Some of you have heard this before. It's a brilliant story which psychologists use a lot. I was saying in earlier on that because I teach psychologists, one of them who works in trauma counselling and torture counselling, people who come over to Australia as migrants who, you know, have been really sort of through, you know, great problems in some of these regimes where they have been on those underground chambers being tortured. And she told me she uses, this is one story which she uses regularly. And it was the story of the monster who came into the emperor's palace. Once there was an emperor who was off on doing some business outside the palace. And while he was away, this monster walked right into the palace. And the monster was so ugly, so frightening, that the guards who were supposed to be protecting the palace froze in terror, allowing the monster to walk right inside the palace and sit on the emperor's chair, on the throne. At that, the guards came to their senses and said, "Get out of here! Who do you think you are? That's our emperor's chair, not yours. Get out!" And at those few unkind words, the demon, the monster, grew an inch bigger, more ugly, more smelly, more offensive. And that really upset the soldiers and the ministers in the palace. "Get out of here! If you stay any longer, you'll be in big trouble!" That's why I like raising my voices after meditation, so that people can wake up. "Get out of here! Who do you think you are?" I also enjoy doing that because I'm not normally allowed to raise my voice as a monk. This is fun time. So, now those more unkind words, unkind deeds, unkind thoughts, the monster grew an inch bigger, more uglier, more smelly, and the language of the monster got worse. And this had been going on for a long time. When the emperor came back, this monster was huge, taking up half the hall. He was literally was monstrous and was so frightening. You've never seen anything so ugly and frightening. Even as I say, Steven Spielberg, with all the resources of DreamWorks, could not manufacture anything so frightening as this. Even apparently the worst creature was the alien. Do you ever see the alien? This is 200 times as frightening as the alien. And the smell, the putrid stench coming off this monster was so bad that all the maggots crawling on that monster threw up. They vomited. They were sick. And the language was so terrible, so bad. Worse than you'd hear in the pubs of Australia when they were beaten at the cricket by New Zealand. It was terrible language. But the reason this guy was the emperor was because he was smart. He looked at that terrible, frightening, ugly, awful monster. He knew what to do. He said, "Welcome. Thank you for coming to... Why did you wait so long to drop in? Has anyone got you a cup of tea or a cup of coffee yet?" And with those few kind words, the monster grew an inch smaller, less ugly, less smelly, less offensive. And everybody in the palace realized their mistake. So they started offering him a cup of tea. "What type of cup of tea would you want? You know, we've got Earl Grey, we've got English breakfast, we've got Lipton's, we've got peppermint, which is good for your health. Would you like some green tea? Lots of antioxidants. It's very good for monsters." And because the monster was so huge, it took about 6 people to give him a foot massage. And that monster loved it. He said, "Just over here, do you know what it's like? Just over there, that's so nice," said the monster. And every kind word, somebody ordered a pizza for him. Monster size. Do they have monster pizzas? They do in Australia, anyway. Monster pizza. Anyway, they brought a monster-sized pizza for the monster. And every kind word, kind deed, even kind thought, the monster grew an inch smaller, less ugly, less smelly, less offensive. And it took what seemed to be such a small time, and that monster was back to the size when he first came in. They never stopped. They were so kind that the monster grew smaller and smaller and smaller until one more act of kindness, and the monster vanished completely away. That's based on a story told by the Buddha himself in the Udana. I changed it a little bit. I added a bit about the pizza and the foot massage. That's not in the original. But the basis of the story is there. And the Buddha said, we call that an anger-eating demon. An anger-eating monster. You give it anger and it grows an inch bigger, more ugly, more smelly, more of a problem. There are a lot of tumors which are anger eating monsters. "Get out of my body, you don't belong here." That's stress, that's negativity.
That's what those tumors feed on. Anger eating monsters. It takes a lot of guts and courage to say welcome. Welcome, tumor. I can stay with you. I know a lot of people who've had brain tumors and other tumors for years. They live together in peace. Some tumors vanish. Why? Anger eating monsters. You can understand, you get a feeling for that. There are many other anger eating demons in life. Schizophrenia, get out of here, you don't belong. Depression. I don't want to be depressed, get out of here. It's amazing little therapy, you can do that as a monk. I'm not sure if you can get away with it as someone who's paid to do this job, because maybe it's not understood, but it works. Welcome, depression. Thank you for visiting me. And when you welcome it, you're not depressed about being depressed. The negativity stops. And the demon grows smaller and smaller. You may not always be able to use that technique, but many, many times you can. And it's another little therapy in your whole bag of tricks which you can try. And sometimes it will hit the spot, you'll have amazing results. That's why some of those trauma victims, anger eating demon, they don't want that to have happened. It has happened. Welcome. Thank you for having visited me, trauma. Then the negativity vanishes and healing can happen. Do you get the point, anger eating demons? It's a brilliant story, and it actually saved many people's lives, enhanced many, many people's psychology. So that's why it's a very powerful story, and it applies to many, 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 many aspects of life. And it's great when you put it into a story, because it's easy to remember. Everything which I'm teaching here over today, stories, things which you will hopefully remember and practice when you leave here. Otherwise it's a waste of time giving you more information which as soon as you leave you forget. So hopefully these are things which you can actually practice, put into your work, and create a lot more happiness and health in the society. Yes? How to deal with sleepiness when doing meditation. The best solution to sleepiness is to sleep. To sleep, to lay down and have a proper snooze. And I knew this was happening, going to happen today, because I'm teaching you techniques and you will fall asleep, because one of the biggest problems of health in a place like Hong Kong is sleep deficit disorder. You don't sleep enough. You know, if any of you want to make a fortune, you just buy a nice quiet place. It costs a lot to buy the place, and just have it a sleep hotel. A place where anybody can go, spend a couple of days catching up on their sleep. No activities. They can have their breakfast, their lunch, their dinner, whenever they want. But just the most comfortable bed in a nice quiet place, so they can just catch up on sleep. 2 or 3 days of just sleeping. Okay, you know, you get up and have a walk, a nice quiet sort of hillside, but the most important activity is just to sleep. And wouldn't it be wonderful? You can just get a place, you just sleep, no clocks, you don't have to get up in the morning for anything. And if you do get up for breakfast, have a nice breakfast and go back to bed again afterwards. Oh, what bliss. I've got a place like that. It's called my retreat center in Perth. People come there, and the first few days of the retreat, they just sleep and sleep and sleep. And they feel so good afterwards. At last they have a place where they don't feel guilty, and they don't have to get up, and they're accepted just to sleep.
And again, that would solve a lot of health problems. Because we don't sleep well, we don't sleep enough. That's one of the reasons why people get sick. So it's called sleep therapy. And one of the reasons why, when you've got nothing to do and it's nice and peaceful and safe, you've got a nice soft mic in front of you, you feel sleepy, because your brain, your mind is saying, I really need to sleep, but now you've got a chance. So you feel sleepy. So at the very least, this meditation which I taught about the body sweeping, you don't have enough time to sleep in your modern lives, but at least when you do have time, please sleep efficiently. So I encourage you, two suitcases, past and future, doesn't matter what happened to you today. You know, you've just been arrested for drugs and you're going to face a court tomorrow and you're going to be executed. That's tomorrow. Put it down. So you don't worry about anything. And number two, if you've got any tightness in the body, sweep the body. So just like you're sweeping the house, get rid of all the tension. So when you go to sleep, you really sleep well. So the few hours you give yourself to sleeping is well used. Get a comfortable bed as well. So make sure, you know, it's well worthwhile spending extra dollars on a comfortable bed, because you spend more time on your bed than in the kitchen. Spend more time in the bed than on the lounge chair. You spend more time in bed than in front of the plasma screen TV. So the thing you spend most time on in your life, you should spend the most money on. So please get a nice comfortable bed. And then you have a nice comfortable sleep. So you're much healthier and happier, and even better, you don't get so angry at the person you live with, so the divorce rate will go down, lawyers will go broke, and people will have a happier life. So that's why you were sleepy, because you need to sleep more. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, feeling so insecure is because we criticize too much, we praise too little. And we've criticized so much that after a while we think, my goodness, there must be something wrong with me. I remember just being on a bus in Australia and sitting behind two girls when they were just coming out of school and listening, these were best friends, and listening to how they were talking to each other. About 13 or 14 year old girls, maybe you might remember this when you were young. Yeah, one of them said, oh, your breasts are too flat. Yeah, you've got a bad nose. No boy will ever go out with you, but you know, you have got no hope. And these were the best of friends. And they were getting criticism from their friends. They get criticism from their teachers, unless they're the top student. You know, work harder. You know, your math is not good enough. You know, your writing is not clear enough. Do you remember that from school? How many times did you get praised, and how many times did you get criticized from your teachers? And you go home, and your mother says, you know, you've got to do more work at home. Your room needs to be tidied up. Don't stay so long out. Don't talk back. Your kids get so much criticism. If you kept a diary, a record, of how many times you praise your kids and how many times you tell them off, you'd be surprised. And you'd understand the problem between parents and the children. What they hear is that they're not respected and loved and understood. Now do the same at work. How many times does your boss praise you? And how many times they tell you off? And your friends, your co-workers. After a while, in life, we get so much criticism hardly any praise. But after a while, we get afraid. There must be something wrong with me. And the criticism hurts so much, we just can't take any more. We're afraid of making mistakes because we get criticized again. That fear of rejection, the fear of mistakes. And that's a stupid way of living in a society. That's why, if any of you ever come to visit the place where I live, Bodhinyana Monastery, even though I am the boss, the manager, very rarely do I criticize any of my monks. Those of you who've been on my retreat, who've been hanging out with me over the last few days, if you make a mistake, I always say the same word, very good. This is not a joke, I do this on purpose, because I want to build you up, praise you, never criticize you. You get enough fault finding in this world, you don't need more fault finding from a monk. You just want to be praised, built up, encouraged, motivated. If you change that and say to your kids, very good, very good, very good. Mum, I got a C, I got an F in my biology. Very good, son. Then what it's doing is building them up, saying, no, it doesn't matter what the teachers say, I'll always love you. At least you've got one place in this world where you'll be accepted and loved. Your home. Why is a home? You get criticized at school, you understand that it's the teacher's job to make you do your mathematics, not mine. You know, my job is to love you to bits and give you a nice home, a place where you feel accepted. So when you go out there into the world, which is tough, where everyone is trying to criticize you, where there's the peer pressure, where it's the social pressure, girls trying to get the boy, boys trying to get the girl, the competition of the world, at least is one place where there's no competition. There's total acceptance. Then a lot of the fear vanishes. We are such a fearful society now. And the one thing we're afraid of most of all is rejection. Failure. Because we're afraid of failure, we fail too much. When you can make mistakes, you don't make so many. That's why in my monastery, you're allowed to make mistakes, which means people don't make so many. They're not afraid of being criticized, so they relax and they do a pretty good job. You understand? So if you're a manager of your little group, please tell your group you're okay to make mistakes. As long as there's not too many, okay, but you can make a few. And then people don't feel so afraid. They're not fearful. But that fear is amazing. Just, you know what it feels like when you're afraid? It sticks in your body, and that creates so much tension, so many health issues and psychological issues. Just fear. It doesn't need to be that way. So please give yourself and your friends a break.
Actually, it's pretty. Oh, I should repeat this. I was saying that if there is a schizophrenia, the doctor, the head of the department in Singapore, told me that he doesn't treat the schizophrenia, he treats the other part of the patient, which is focusing more on the other part of the patient, the other part of the problem, the good part. And that is so that we don't feel so afraid and negative towards the schizophrenia. We don't
We don't exaggerate that more than it's worth and think that I am the schizophrenic, that is a huge problem, that is me, that is because that becomes you. And the same is really with the tumour. The tumour is a big problem, and goodness gracious, that's terrible. When you welcome the tumour, it gives you more space to focus on the other part. It's not a big problem anymore. Well, then you can stay in here. You can stay over here. I'm going to deal with the rest of my life. That's why, look, please, there is no such thing as a person, so as a cancer patient. They're a person with cancer. Please, they're much bigger than the cancer. So it's wonderful to be able to know that. They're not a cancer patient. They're a person with a cancer. Because the cancer only takes a part of their body, a huge part which hasn't got cancer. So if they can focus on that, the problem is put in perspective. So I think the two can be compatible. They're not really diametrically opposed to each other. It's the same if you've got like a pain in your leg. Say, thank you, pain in my leg. It's great to be here. Thank you, pain in my leg. Then a lot of times it gets much, much less. But you know, if you say, oh, it's pain in my leg. You know, that might be sort of something serious. That may be some sort of disease which is spread into my body. That may kill me. I may have to actually lose my leg. I may have to have it amputated. And that's if they get cleared like that. I mean, things really go wrong. I actually remember, one of my relations, I don't know if this happens in Hong Kong, but he had a motorbike accident and had to take his leg off, amputate it. But when they took him into the hospital, they amputated the wrong leg. It happens. So you know, when they found out, the one which was really injured, they had to take that off. So having lost both his legs, he sued the hospital, but he lost his case. He didn't have a leg to stand on. That's a joke. He's laughing. It's good for your health. It was a similar joke, if you haven't heard it. Oh, guy, again, same thing happened to him. He lost both his legs because they took off the one leg. And the doctor came up to him and said, look, I'm sorry that I've got some good news and bad news. The bad news is we took off the one leg, so we had to move straight in and take off the other leg, so we have to take both your legs off. The good news is the guy in the next bed wants to buy your slippers. Okay, a bit of sick humour is really good. And couldn't stand anymore. Yes.
There are some teachings like if we want to transform our suffering, we need to really face the suffering, embrace it so as to transform, not to escape it. But then like this morning, like if for the case of like schizophrenia, you mentioned that we should focus on other things instead of that schizophrenia problem.
Okay, it's again the same question is, when you have any suffering, should you face it to transform it, or you should try and escape it to get rid of it that way? And the schizophrenic example is actually, you know, looking at the other part of it, and the schizophrenia disappears. The facing it, you know, is the demon in the emperor's palace, welcome, thank you for being here, and that gets rid of it. But both of the ways are different ways of transcending it. So when we have the suffering, yeah, we face it, in order to transcend it. So it's two ways of achieving the same goal, so you can have a life free of suffering. Sometimes we have to face that suffering to accept it, embrace it, for it to disappear. Because that's our job, we want to relieve suffering. We want to sort of have people live a life with minimal suffering. So we don't say, come to the hospital, yeah, you're suffering, you have to accept it. Then why are you being paid? What are you doing? They can accept it out there in the world. So they'll say, no, that's not what I come here for. So they want to find a way of transcending their suffering, either living with it without suffering, but at least it's a problem for them, and we have to solve that problem and help them. Think two ways of doing the same thing. Two paths leading to the same goal. That makes sense, sort of? Okay. Thank you for nodding your head. It's very kind. Schizophrenia is that condition where a person hears voices in their mind, sees visions which they take to be more real than what they hear in the world with their ears and they see with their eyes. I remember reading an article of schizophrenia where this boy, he would see like decapitated heads rolling in front of him, which were totally illogical and unreal, but to him that was more real and more believable than seeing people. And it was actually told by someone who had schizophrenia and was trying to describe what it's like. It's like the reality which you give to illusions is far stronger than the reality that you give to what we all agree on as real life. The sounds you hear, they're more real. Which is why people follow those sounds. They follow that advice. They follow those visions. Yes, lots of questions there, yes? Practice Zen. I mean, Buddhism is always middle way. You can read some books, you can practice. Even intellectuals, they feel. They love their dinners and they taste the food, and there's food they like, the food they don't like. They're not just always in their head. So they're sometimes in their mouth. So people do have those feelings and emotions, whether intellectuals or not. And so teaching something like the body scan is a wonderful way of getting people out of their head into their body. And intellectuals know from all the books they've read that these things are important for their health and well-being. So I think even intellectuals, if you market it correctly, they find it very easy to do some meditation. There should be no problem there at all. I've never found problems with intellectuals doing meditation. In fact, they love it because it gives them another part of their life which enhances their ability. Once they wish to use their brain, they can use it much more efficiently when they've given it a rest. And reading. Yeah, you've got to read. But I love telling the story. I told it on the retreat of the intellectual, the professor, who heard that it was a new 5-star restaurant opened up in Hong Kong. And a professor, loved his food, called the restaurant to make a reservation, but he had to wait 2 months before he could get a reservation. It was such a popular restaurant. So when the 2 months went past You know, he dressed up in a nice suit, went to the restaurant, and they had to check his ID to make sure that, you know, he had a reservation. They said, yes, you've got a reservation tonight, you can come in. So the maitre d' took him to his table, and, you know, the decor in that restaurant was amazing, just beautiful chandeliers, just amazing sort of the way that it was all laid out. And the waiter came to give him the menu. The waiter was like a butler from the Buckingham Palace in tails and beautiful boots, bow tie, and gave him the menu, which was on card, in a thick card, written in beautiful calligraphy, like it should have been in a museum in Hong Kong rather than in a restaurant. You'd expect that in a five-star restaurant. And so the professor received the menu, then the professor ate the menu, paid his bill and left. Because the professor didn't know the difference between the menu and the food. I think you get the idea there. The intellectuals, if they're really intellectuals, they don't just read, but they see where those words are pointing to. They don't just read the menu, they order the food and eat it. I think I made the point there. Very good. There's one more question over here. Yeah, and then we finish off. It's 4 o'clock, yeah? The advice is it really depends on the individual. And I say that because one of my monks is a clinical schizophrenic. And he's a brilliant guy. And I'm so proud of him. He came, he wanted to become a monk, but no, he has to be on medication. He's a schizophrenic. But as a monk, you always give, as a Buddhist, you give people a chance. And what really convinced me that to give this fellow as much chance as possible, when he'd only been staying a couple of months, and he came out to me and said, I'm losing it, I need to go into the hospital. He was mindful enough to be able to almost self-medicate. He was aware of the symptoms, and he was smart enough to know he needed to be admitted. And from that time on, I trusted him. And he's done amazing progress. We ordained him as a novice. He did really well. And now he's a monk. He's been a monk for about 3 years now. I'm just waiting for him to finish his basic training. And I want to let him loose and teach from a schizophrenic's point of view, rather a person with schizophrenia, what it's like and how he's used mindfulness and meditation. And most importantly, kindness. To get his situation to a point, you wouldn't know that he has to go in once a month to get blood tests and everything else. A brilliant young guy. He's a success story of how you can take a person with schizophrenia, really quite severe schizophrenia, turn him around and living a really fulfilling and wonderful life. That's why I want him to come and share his experiences. Because he can do that, I can't do that. I don't know what it's like to have schizophrenia. He does, and he knows how it's dealt with, through mindfulness, through meditation. So wait a couple of years, and I'm going to release him. Brilliant guy. Yeah. It's really up to him or her. So you ask, why do you want to do this? And if they're mindful enough and smart enough, they say that, you know, I can help you, but it's really, you know, it's your game here. You have to do this, and you have to be mindful enough to see the symptoms before they get so strong that you lose touch with reality. I can help you, but please be careful. It's a very, very dangerous thing you're doing, but a good thing you're doing. So, you know, if you feel that it's getting worse, the feelings, the mindfulness should show you that, and get into hospital as soon as you can. And don't be afraid of going to hospital.
Don't take away the stigma from this. Little by little, you'll be able to see those signs and be able to learn your mind and be able to deal with it, so it's no longer a problem. So basically that's what it is. Does that make sense to you? Yeah. Yes, yeah. 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 It does help. Yeah. 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 What you're saying here, so you're a psychologist, you deal with people with schizophrenia, and if you give a meditation, it has to be guided, so there's not much space there for the people to actually to go off into their fantasies and dreams. Yep, but eventually that they have to guide themselves. That has to be the goal, because you can't support them 24 hours a day. And this guy does that. I mean, he's still on medication, but the medication is so much low now that, and the psychologists over in Perth are doing studies on him, because it's a really weird case, just how he managed to basically almost cure himself. So it can be done. So I'm saying that from personal experience. I was very scared of having people with schizophrenia in a monastery, because there's not much supervision, a lot of time by yourself, afraid that they would go over the edge. This guy proved me wrong. So please, just in life, give people a chance. Sometimes it's impossible, but you give people a chance and they prove you wrong. I have a lot of trust in human beings. If you trust them, they nearly always not just live up to your trust, but exceed your trust. Okay, there we go. 4 o'clock. So, time for me to retire.
Okay, thank you very much for all the participants, for your participation. Maybe shall we all rise to join our palms again? And we kindly invite our Venerable to use the door first, and because there are some refreshments and some teas served, so maybe Venerable, maybe.
Okay, okay. See you next time. Take care. Be good. Don't do anything I wouldn't do.
Thank you, Venerable Me. And for the rest, I will pass.
Okay, thank you very much. So, thank you for coming today. We hope you really enjoy the program. And we